Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, this is a show with a bit of a difference, inspired by one of my guests, who you'll meet on the show a little bit later. We're going to take a look at the prison system in Ireland, health and wellness within it, or lack thereof, discussed with three people who work supporting inmates. This, I feel, is going to be a very special one. I'm going to be joined in a moment by Ruth Ann Barry. Ruth Ann is a mother, a lived experience advocate, a justice reform consultant and purpose-driven coach whose work is rooted in empathy, empowerment and real change. We'll also be joined by Brian Penny, a former addict and now neuroscientist who works with Oberstown Children Detention Campus to talk about trauma, anxiety, addiction, self-belief and self-care. And Deirdre O'Donnell, who's a child and adolescent psychotherapist, a breathwork teacher and a play therapist and a Tides of Change facilitator in Limerick Prison. So because this show has a bit of a difference, this is a big topic with three brilliant guests and I'm keen to get into it with them and give it as much time as possible. So I'm actually not going to give you my health and wellness week this week, but suffice to say, I'm good. Now, I want to caveat this chat knowing that thoughts around crime and prison can be triggering and divisive, particularly if you have been a victim of a crime. I believe there is no such thing as a bad person. Often people's behaviour is tied to trauma. And I believe the prison should be a place of reform, restoration, repair over punishment. But I understand that that can be a difficult concept for people. But that is the lens through which we are going to hold these discussions today. Learning about health and wellness in the prison system. Does it exist? Could it exist? And what would it look like? Would love to hear your thoughts on this one. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. So let me introduce Ruth Ann Barry. Ruth Ann has lived experience of the prison system and is now an advocate for justice reform, working as a consultant and as a purpose-driven coach whose work is rooted in empathy, empowerment and real change. Through her roles with the Probation Service Advisory Council, the Department of Justice Employers Network and as an expert by experience with Reform International, Ruth Ann brings lived experience into national conversations on justice reform, rehabilitation and second chances. Ruth Ann, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Claire.
Now, it's going to be hard for you to get your whole story into a few minutes, but can you let people know, before we get into the changes we'd like to see within the prison system, your experience of it?
My experience of the prison system, I suppose, there was good and bad, there was traumatic and there was moments of joy. I'm not going to paint it completely with a bad brush, because there were moments that I had within the prison system that turned my life around. But there were also moments that were quite traumatic for me. So in the prison system, I experienced miscarriage.
And you and I met at a maternal mental health event for a year of care organised by Eilish Gormley, who's also been a guest on this programme. And you were talking about mothers giving birth in the prison system. And after the first year, the children are taken into care and there's no counselling at that time. There's nothing given to women at that time. That really shocked me.
So I also experienced a pregnancy within the prison up until 13 days before I had my daughter. And like, that is supposed to be the most joyous moment of your life. And I suppose you're restricted to certain things, but the environment for children, I know they want to keep that bond with a mother and a child, but for me, it's not the place for a baby. I was constant with voicing my opinion that I didn't want my daughter to come back to the prison. And that's not where I wanted my daughter. I lost all my family support because they were, if you can't look after the kids that you have at home, how can you look after a baby? How can you do that on the other kids? And I did understand it, but it was very hard to take in there.
And can you tell people about the circumstances surrounding you going to prison in the first place?
It's not something that I generally discuss because I have victims. And when I went into prison to do restorative anger management, AVP, offensive behaviours with probation, because I never want anyone else to go through what other people went through. And I want to know, I want those people to know that, like, they're safe to walk the streets having me in society today. And that's, I take full responsibility and accountability for what I've done in life. You know, nobody deserves to be on the other end of violence. And that's something that I had to sit with. And I had to do massive forgiveness for around myself and my actions and my cause of different things in life. But I also had to forgive a lot of other people. Because it's not a world that I want my youngest brought up in. And even today, even though she's young, I've told her about the person that I was, that I was angry, that I was aggressive. And, like, people, how I deal with things today is a world away from how I would have dealt with things through violence. It was like my armour. I felt that I needed to put that on. And that's not the way. You're not educated enough. And, like, at the moment, their violence is increasing. And women who are perpetrators, but women don't get that platform to speak about it enough. And there's not enough implemented for women who are perpetrators. Or the engagement with victims as well. Like, and yes, I believe that second chances, but I also believe that if you commit a violent act, like, it's the only option in my eyes. I do believe in second chances. I know people will disagree with me, but...
And I would have thought, as I said at the start of the show, that that's what we would want our prison system to do, to give a person an opportunity to be held accountable, for there to be a consequence for their actions, yeah. But also a place to grow, to learn, to be... unless you get a life sentence, to be reintegrated back into society as a mother, as a worker, as a family member, as the best member of society you can be. So it seems, you know, I was reading an article in researching for this that you were quoted in, that was in the Irish Examiner last summer.
Yeah.
And it spoke about how just over half of female offenders are jailed for theft. They have addiction issues. 70% of those convicted on a public order or assault charge. They were talking about it as survival crimes, to put food on the table, to feed an addiction. And again, as you say, it's not a excuse, but it's a context and it's a level of understanding. So I would have felt that there would need to be some sort of support in the prison system. And it sounds, when I say bringing wellness, health and wellness to the prison system, that I'm going to be lighting a bit of incense and just, you know, saying, come by, everybody, will you drink a green juice? But do you think it would make a big difference if people were able to get those supports, be it talk therapy, learning about movement, education around lifestyle medicine, things that perhaps they wouldn't have even had access to before, like nutrition and stress management, all the things you've touched on?
So a pivotal point for myself was education and sports. So I really threw myself into the gym and there and running. I was in running and I was very athletic when I was young, through different things. Women, girls often fall out of athletics from a young age. So that was reignited in the prison system. And that was one of the things that massively helped me, was fitness. It gave me time to process things. It gave me different coping mechanisms, tools. And I pushed for us to be able to do the level two. We got the level two. And then I was able to teach classes in there. But it was a gym officer that was in there. And he told me that this will help you. Push for it, keep on it, keep being consistent. And I did. And I loved the gym. And I loved the feeling that it gave me. And like, I do running and I do groups outside here with kids, marginalised kids, kids whose parents are in prison in addiction with NAIC. And sports massively impacts them. Now we get to bring running. Like, we've had a colour run in the women's Docus, and they raised thousands for Neuro Vibe Tribe in Ballyferma, where the officers, the staff and the women were all throwing colour at each other. And I never seen so much laughter in a prison setting. You know, there was no judgment, there was no arguments. Certain months of the year, self-harm goes up in the prison. And with them implementing different, they done a zombie run, they done a recovery run, they done other 5Ks. But they've also started Boxing Clever. So I don't know if you've ever heard of the Recovery Academy. So they will gain a level for health-related fitness, and then they will gain a level 5 addiction studies. They are graduating on Thursday, and we had 20 women, and 20 women continuously remained consistent. Then they go on then after that and they become recovery coaches. They do 20 weeks of that. But some of these, I know them personally. They have reduced in how they behave, or their addiction, how they behave. And that's all through sports. They've implemented, we got NAIC in, we got Bose in and other different people, and spoke about what's in the community. They participated in different sports. But that's sports helping them, you know. And we've got people in for yoga. There's a girl that comes in and she does sound bath, Audrey. And she does Reiki and tapping and NLP. And they love it. So it does help. So when I was in Clover Hill and I was saying about the running that we were doing, they don't have that. They don't have access to that. And then there's going to be a pilot program called Trauma Talks being brought in. And Fritzi Hortzman is her name. She's an award-winning producer. And she went into the prison system in America and seeing the level of trauma that was in there, and designed a program with Gabor Maté, and I am one of the facilitators of that. So Turnaround Project in Belfast partnered up with Fritzi, and they trained 8 of us north and south of the border, and it will be going into the prisons come September, and Fritzi will be coming over to do, it's a very powerful thing, and it's called Inside, Step Inside the Circle. So these are things that are needed. And especially when the women or the men see somebody delivering programs or coming in and doing them, that once might have been on a floor in a cell beside them or was sitting in a dining hall with them, they see that change. I am seeing a lot more people now coming out and going into treatment and turning their life around, but we have a system that is falling apart. And it's bursting at the seams. And like, I have to say, Karen McCaffrey is fighting for change. It's not getting implemented. I know people in justice who are doing Trojan work, but it's just our system is crumbling. And we have people sleeping on floors. And how can you implement that? And programs like this that are so beneficial for them when there's not enough officers for them to open the schools.
Yeah, so there are chinks of light is what I'm taking from what you said, but still massive change needs to be made. And as you said, having all these amazing ideas when you're packed to capacity and understaffed, you know, there are certain things that need to be looked at. But I'm glad to hear that people's well-being is being considered and that rehabilitation is being considered, support is being considered to allow people who have perhaps made mistakes or been victims of their own circumstances and made poor choices can be reintegrated back into society. Yeah. We might revisit that again with you, Ruthann, when that programme opens in September, because I think that deserves a little more. But I really appreciate you coming on today and opening up. And I know revisiting things that have been very difficult, but you've turned that pain into power to push for change and to help others.
I want people to see that we don't have to resort to violence. You know, there's always an alternative. Now, today, I always think of consequences before you respond. Like, it's in prison, it's the most unlikely place that you think that you can sit with yourself. And that's where I was able to sit with myself and walk through things. Our system needs to be rehabilitative. I don't think we're quite just there yet. But when I was in the prison system, I was able to do that rehabilitation myself, but with some support. Like, I had probation, in fairness, and my probation officer, normally who you have in the prison isn't who you have outside, and that follow through for me was so important that she was able to have that crossover. These are people I ran from and authoritative figures I never respected that I've so much admiration for today. You know, I see them as human beings. I don't see them as authoritative figures. And I think that that's changing. Yes, I do know that, you know, we're not going to agree on everything and we have different views on prison system, but we're able to put that aside, like.
Yeah, and it just shows that with the right supports, people can thrive. Ruthann Barry, appreciate you coming on the show. Coming up after the break, we'll meet our panel, Brian Penny and Deirdre O'Donnell, both of whom bring wellness practices to prisons.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking, where in this show we're looking at health and wellness within the prison system. And I'm joined now by our panel. Brian Penny is a former heroin addict, now neuroscientist, a speaker, author and podcast host. His work focuses on helping people understand how their brain drives behaviour, break destructive habits and thinking patterns and build resilience in high pressure environments. His RTÉ documentary series Hooked was a national conversation, and his podcast Change is Possible speaks to people about the challenges life throws our way and the tools we can use to overcome them. He works with Oberstown Detention Campus to educate and inspire young men there to consider the possibility of change. You're very welcome, Brian.
Delighted to be here, Claire.
And sitting alongside him is Deirdre O'Donnell, a child and adolescent psychotherapist, a play therapist and a breathwork teacher. She's brought the Tides of Change programme to Limerick Prison, and Dee is actually the person who, when we trained together, level one breathwork teaching, it gave me the idea for this show, looking at bringing health and wellness to prison. You're very welcome, Deirdre. We finally made it happen.
We did. Thanks for having me here, Claire.
So I might start a bit with you and how you came to be bringing the work you do to prison.
I have a great story about how Tides of Change came to prisons. So I work in a family resource centre one or two days a week, and a lot of women were coming for healings, but they were really struggling on a bigger level, a broader level. And all we were able to offer was parenting programs. So I created Tides of Change using my therapeutic background, my healing background, and bringing it all together. And I wrote this program called Tides of Change. And one day I was driving to work in Clondalkin and I saw a sign for Arbour Hill. And I said, this program should be in prisons. And that was the thought. Further on the road, I was in Egypt going on a hot air balloon, and I told people on the hot air balloon, do you know, I used to wish when I was in my 20s and all romantic that I'd like to be proposed to on a hot air balloon. And when I got off the hot air balloon, I had a message. Limerick Prison is open for proposals for 24 hours. So on a boat on the Nile with scraps of paper, I wrote the proposal to bring Tides of Change into Limerick Prison. And that was it. There it began.
Wow. I mean, I have so many images in my head.
Yeah.
But nobody proposed to you, Dee.
Not yet. Well, yes.
I thought she was going
to. Yeah. Me too. We obviously watched far too much Disney and read too many stories growing up, because that's not the important part of the story. And what is Tides of Change? And tell us a little bit about it.
So Tides of Change is a program I developed for women who have struggled with trauma, struggled with very difficult childhoods, and just don't understand trauma, the impact of their childhood experiences, don't understand maybe domestic violence, relationships, patterns, behaviours. And a lot of the women I meet really don't love themselves and are really struggling with how to love themselves. So with that in mind, I do a psychoeducational piece. So each week there will be a topic that we will, self-love being one of the weeks, and we look at that and we get their ideas and we talk about it. And then I will do a meditation, and I bring in drumming and breathwork and visualizations, and I bring in the topic into the meditation. So we can start meditating on what we've discussed and what we've talked about and what has come up for them in the psychoed piece. And then we do a creative piece. So as a play therapist, I'm working with children who don't use verbal communication to show me their inner world. I'm very well able to use creative pieces with the women to allow them for their inner voice to come out and be expressed, and their subconscious thoughts come out in whatever creative activity we are doing. And then we sit and talk about that.
Wow. And it's so incredible to hear you speak, and it's so holistic, isn't it? Because how important is it that we have... Obviously, you're a psychotherapist, so you believe in talk therapy and the inner work, but that we allow that to be integrated through things like drumming, meditation, breath work, to let whatever shifts have happened or realizations have happened integrate into the body.
Absolutely. And I think we can't shift our inner world through talk alone. I think that can keep us completely stuck in the story. And maybe re-traumatizing. So we have to find other ways. And definitely the wellness and the creative therapies really help people to shift. And they're very reluctant on day one. They're kind of quite afraid of, what is this? What are you challenging me to do? And to really hold that space for them and be kind and compassionate and work at their pace and be very, very aware of what's coming up and responding to all of that.
Amazing, Brian. I want to bring you in. Tell us about your work with Oberstown and how that came about.
Yeah, so the work in Oberstown, that was a couple of years ago now, but I was just serendipitously asked to do a prison talk at one stage. And the reality is that probably for people going into prison, about 70% of them have an addiction problem. And I suppose that's where I was brought in on that angle. And I think something really important to understand is that for me and for many people, addiction isn't the problem. And that's a personal problem. And for many people, committing crimes, like, the underlying issue is usually some kind of trauma, some kind of challenge that they faced. And part of my message is to get people to understand, right, it's not about the addiction, it's what is driving the problematic behaviour that is getting you into trouble in your life. So that's what I try to do. The message I try to deliver in prisons is really around understanding why you do what you do. And before I get onto Oberstown, I'll give you an example of this. I was in... I won't give the prison to give any identity away, but I was in a prison one time and I was delivering a workshop and talking about my own journey and my own story. And one of the lads was like, I could see him a little bit agitated in his chair and he wanted to talk. He didn't want to talk. And he says, look, I never talk at these things. He says, but I always thought I was a bad person or even an evil person. But like, you're talking about your trauma is the reason why you went into addiction and what got you into trouble. And I didn't just take drugs. I sold drugs for years to fund that habit, to take away the pain, to feel safe. And that's what it's all about. Trauma, you feel unsafe. And he says, I'm thinking the reason why I done the things I done could be something to do with the fact that my mom committed suicide and I spent a few days with her body when I was 9 years of age. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is the understanding I try to get across to people, that you're probably reacting in a normal way to abnormal situations. just because like you're committing crime and you're taking drugs, that mightn't be normal for someone growing up in a middle class environment, but it's very normal for people if you've experienced a lot of pain in life. So I suppose when I went to Oberstown, the idea was just to deliver a one day workshop, but we ended up delivering a week long retreat, and I had some great people just jump in with me. Like we got Ray Goggins, not the army guy, for those Hell Week and stuff. Ray came in for the day, all free of charge. I'd even Owen McGee, the finance fella, coming in. So we were trying to get people to come in from different perspectives, different backgrounds to talk about and just show the young lads in there that people cared, you know. But we had the most amazing week. I'll never forget it when we walked in on the first day, because we had the same group, two groups, and we delivered the same program in the morning and the afternoon to two groups throughout the whole week. And at first we were like, right, what is this about? We don't trust them. And you could feel the nervousness, the energy in the room was a lack of safety and a lack of trust. By the end of the week, everyone was just hugging each other. We were having such a laugh, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful week. It really was. And for me, I think it's just planting seeds of hope that change is possible. Back to that mantra. And the one overarching thing I found with every speaker that came in, and we had our John Boland, who was in addiction himself, with lots of people coming in, and what we were trying to get them to understand is that they have so much potential, but they just haven't been given a starting point in life that was allowing them to fulfill that potential. So we're trying to plant seeds of hope that they could unleash the potential in their lives by giving them sort of tools and techniques to help them to regulate their nervous system, to manage challenging situations in a way that's going to serve them instead of getting them into trouble.
And that's so important, isn't it? Because when you were saying it, Deirdre, I was really thinking about an interview I did on the show with a psychotherapist who talked about the difference between guilt and shame. And guilt is feeling you've done something wrong, but shame is feeling there's something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different energy, isn't it? And you spoke, as Brian did, to people not loving themselves and thinking they're a bad person. And that doesn't work for rehabilitation or being able to reintegrate back in and choose different behaviours.
You're exactly right. What I feel sometimes, and it's throughout all my work, but in the prison work, is to actually see people's light. And no matter what they've done or who they're presenting in front of me in the day, I will look. So I remember one day, one woman was sitting down beside me and I just quietly said to her, I said, you know, people have really hurt you, haven't they? And she's like, yeah. And I wondered, has anyone ever said that to her and reflected back to her that the world has been so cruel to her that led eventually to her imprisonment? So it is about seeing the good and reflecting that back. But they have to be able to, people have to be able to see it in themselves. There's no point in me seeing it in them until, so I'm working with them to start to get them to see it within themselves, because all healing comes from inside of them. I can't heal anyone. I can only, as Brian said, drop the seed and hopefully give them ways and means of starting connecting with their own selves and being able to find that within them. So that would be my goal.
Yeah. And, you know, I often go back to the saying, hurt people hurt people. And we discussed at length in the first half of the show, of course, ultimately, our first respect and sensitivity goes to the victims of crime. However, if we want to ensure that there are less victims and there's less reoffending, this is where the focus needs to go. I'll have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue our panel discussion looking at whether wellness and well-being practices have a place within the prison system.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking, where we are looking at the prison system and where health and wellness sits within that. I'm joined in studio by lived experience advocate for reform in the justice prison system, Ruth Ann Barry. I have Brian Penny, a neuroscientist and now speaker, author. I mean, you've got a lot of strings to your bow now, but you do work in the prison system through workshops to inspire particularly young men. And Deirdre O'Donnell, who is a child and adolescent psychotherapist, a play therapist and a breathwork teacher who brings wellness practices to the prison system. Deirdre, I wanted to get back to the drumming that you spoke about and those integrative practices that along with the therapeutic discovery and the inner work. Yeah. Tell me about drumming and how powerful that has been and why you think that is.
drumming is magic. So it's a shamanic drum because I have some shamanic training. And if you think of every cell in our body, it is energy. It vibrates. And the vibration of the drum stirs something within people. Some people actually can't cope with it and some people love it. So it depends on each person's body. But I have a great story. I use it, one, because it's a noise when I'm asking people to look inside and sit with themselves, because silence is very difficult for people. So it's a great way to busy the brain, and the brain can focus on the noise and allow their stress levels to drop. But I have a story one day, and I was going into the prison and something had happened. So everyone was very angsty. There was a lot of anger in the group. And I said to them, old ladies, I said, you're going to lynch me. I said, today I'm doing gratitude. I was thinking, oh, and they were all so angry. And when I did a check-in, one lady said, you know, she said, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be alive today. And I said, that's okay, but we welcome. I welcome all states. And she sat in the group, but she had never allowed me drum. I drum at everyone's back and she'd never allowed me to drum. And I asked her on this particular day, I think, you know, drumming would be a little bit helpful for you. I'll keep my eyes open and if you move at all, I'll stop. So she agreed. And I did the drumming at her and we did the day. And at the end of the day, in the closing circle, everyone gives a word. And she said, I'm so grateful to be alive. And that's the power when we bring in these things into prisons. And I'm bringing in myself with the tools I have. Brian is bringing in, Ruthann is in, and each person, but you're bringing your own soul and light into that place and you're shining that, but allowing them to receive in any way they can. And that's magic. It's pure magic. And I hope that lady got something that day. And it was from that, the beat of the drum and the changing of the vibration.
And it was multi-leveled. It was her feeling confident enough to speak those dark thoughts out mm-hmm. loud, for you to see it, receive it and hold space and look and see that light in her through all of that. And the drumming was the magic. Mm-hmm. That was multi-layered. That just hit me in the heart and soul. I can tell you that. What about breath work? Where does that come into it and what role does that play?
So breath work, I don't do a long period of breath. I just do it at the very beginning when everyone's in their seats and we're just grounding and tuning in. And I do about safety. So I use breath work to start bringing in, you're safe in this moment. You're, you know, your body will allow your body to calm down. We'll allow. So I only do very few minutes. I've never done a longer breath work session. So it just helps to ground them, bring them into their bodies and connect. Again, it's this connection with that internal. People have maybe never connected with their breath. They just breathe, and shallow breathing. So it's lovely to just bring it in as a tool to help people's bodies calm down. And we're looking at that fight or flight. And a lot of the women I meet are in fight or flight because of the nature of where they're living. And just to start bringing those tools, because they can do that in their room if I teach them the very basics.
Yeah, and it's a powerful tool that is free. What are some of the tools that you bring, Brian, especially when you touched on giving people different coping mechanisms to deal with trauma, to deal with behaviours? What are some of the tools you try and impart to others?
Yeah, I think what's important to recognise as well, like the question is, does wellness belong in the prisons? And of course it does, but it's not for everyone in the prisons. Some people are not in a position to be able to hear it. No amount of wellness will help. Their basic needs aren't being met. They're probably, if they go back outside, their life is under threat. And like, breath work is a huge part of my life. It changed my life in terms of a lever to change anxiety. But if my life was under threat, well, I have other things that I'm going to be worrying about. So it's not going to work for everybody. Sometimes there's other more bigger interventions are needed, you know, that way. And I remember having a chat with someone one time, and it was in Mountjoy Prison. And I could be getting the statistics of this wrong, but let's say there's 500-600 people in Mountjoy Prison, 70% of them with an addiction issue. And there was one person that was dealing with addiction issues within there to help them. So an addiction counsellor. So the stats of that are just absolutely crazy. So some people just need those deeper interventions. But what I would say for those that the message will work for, I think the delivery is really important. And something I tried to do, I tried to bring in my own story to try to inspire them and try to energize them and really help the message to land. Because if they just hear, like you mentioned, Dan, like if they just hear breath work, well, that's not going, I'm in prison here. What the hell is breath work going to do? So if you can shape it in a way, I think the delivery is nearly more important, to shape it in a way that this can work for you as well. And I'd use examples of other people I've worked with in similar situations. I'd use an example of myself, and I suppose my lived experience of addiction and crime and challenges, socioeconomic challenges, sort of bring that on board as well. But for me then as well, it's make it super simple and physiology first. And I think that's where breath work can be really powerful, because for some people, I always come back to this idea, it's like a decision-making framework in my life, values versus feelings-based decisions, right? So I might value my relationship with my partner, I might value integrity and honesty, but I feel like avoiding a difficult conversation because it's going to be uncomfortable. And I remember delivering this message in the prisons one time, and a good friend of mine, Bob Cullen, who served 7.5 years locked up, I went in and delivered a talk, and he came back to me and he says that a message that I talked about really landed with a prisoner. And the idea was, I was saying, right, do you value your freedom, or do you feel like acting out in anger, or feel like robbing something or committing a crime because you feel like doing it? And he remembers that just really landed with him. He says, right, I value my freedom and I value the relationships I have with people. So he made it his mission, right, I'm not going to act out of just emotion and feeling, because that's going to bring me in the wrong direction. And I think to be able to regulate your nervous system so you're not reacting emotionally and impulsively is absolutely key, because that probably gets 99% of people in the prisons in trouble. It's an emotional, impulsive, reactive situation that gets them into trouble. So trying to really frame things in a certain way, as well as giving them the really practical tools in the moment. But again, the delivery is key in terms of making it work for them.
Deirdre, as you were the inspiration for the show that day in our breathwork class, teacher training class, what would you like to see change? How would you like to see this implemented more? Because I imagine there are some people listening, and I think anytime you hear the word wellness, there's people who do a bit of an eye roll and think, oh, for God's sake. And then you're talking about bringing it into the prison system. Well, that's a double eye roll. What would you say?
Absolutely. All the feedback I ever get is, one, it should be available to every prisoner. This is my particular program, and it should be longer. So I think the prisoners are looking for it. They want it. They want to be able to start connecting with themselves and feel. And again, if we want these people to go out and be able to live in society, we need to pump into them and value them and as members of society. So I think it's vital, because we're outside and we're practicing wellness and we know the benefits for our lives. It benefits everybody. We're bringing it into schools. We're bringing it everywhere because we know the value of it. The statistics show that it works. And these are human beings. They need it too. And that's what we should be giving to them.
Yeah. What about yourself, Brian? What changes would you like to see come in?
I think the changes that need to come in, like we really need to look at the idea, like imagine someone going into prison, right? And we spent the money on the resources. It costs approximately 60,000 to 90,000 euro to keep someone in prison for a year. And I remember hearing this story one time of this this lad that was locked up in prison, and he was asked, they were doing a mindfulness breathwork meditation. He says, can you just sit down there and close your eyes while you breathe? And he says, oh, I can't close my eyes with people that close. And he says, why? And he says, oh, I was abused, sexually abused as a kid, and I don't feel safe in that situation. He was taking drugs because of that trauma, and he was locked up for possession of those drugs. He did not belong in prison. So that's a whole lot of conversation around possession and stuff like that, but he didn't belong in prison. But let's say you bring those people into the prison, right, and you isolate them. Like, what we know about isolation, human isolation, what that does to the brain, it releases molecules within our brain that makes us aggressive, paranoid and anxious. When we are socially isolated and disconnected, our brain craves that human connection with other people, and if it doesn't get it, it's going to seek that want somewhere else. So it's just going to have all sorts of negative impacts on a human being. So we need to just be able to get the resources, and for people that do go into the prison, the difference in them going back out and reoffending because they're being punished, and I granted, you go to prison to be punished, I get that, that makes sense. But if we're bringing them in there, like, give them the best resources possible, because when they leave, if you have one person walking out and reoffending, the ripple effect of that versus if he gets some kind of healing in the prison and goes back out and becomes a person in society that's going to give and help in society in some way, they're like ripple effects in a completely different perspective. And like, we've got to look at long term thinking here, because the short term fixes just don't work. There has to be a bigger picture thinking around this.
Well, that 100% is the drum I'm beating, Deirdre, as beautifully as yours. This conversation and show has exceeded my expectations for shifting thought patterns, and I really appreciate all of you for coming in, sharing your heart, your soul and your insight. To Brian Penny, to Deirdre O'Donnell and to Ruth Ann Barry, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can always email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. But that's it for the show this week. My thanks to my producer, Aoife Breen, to Hugo De Silva Scott, who was on sound. Rory Galvin was on podcasts, and thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.